Crawl out through the fallout, baby, when they drop that bomb. Crawl out through the fallout with the greatest of aplomb. When your white count's getting higher, hurry, don't delay. I'll hold you close and kiss those radiation burns away.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 21 of the Punished Podcast. I'm your host, David Silbert, an editor here at the Punished Backlog, and we've got a fun episode this this month. I forget the cadence we do this on, Sam. We do this semi-monthly.
We try to do every month. We'll see what that actually goes.
Well, we're aspiring for greatness here. In this episode, we're covering video game adaptations, our favorite TV shows, films, books, board games, just about anything else that adapts our favorite video game hobby. But first, I want to take a moment to kind of go around the horn and introduce our panelists for this episode. And so let's go around the horn, introduce everyone, and also for our icebreaker this month, what's your favorite animal companion in a video game?
So hi, I'm Gary Wilson, he, him, writer for the Punished Backlog. My favorite animal companion is probably, I gotta go with the classic Epona. Like, there is just something about having a steady companion that's there even through multiple, you know, generations, through multiple different permutations. It's nice to have, you know, something reliable to come back to.
Sam Martinelli, an editor at the Punished Backlog, and I'm going to go with a different horse that you all know by saying, come here, Roach.
Yeah, there it is.
Geralt's horse, Roach. Every time he gets a new horse, he always names it Roach, the Witcher.
Vaughn Hunt, writer at the Punished Backlog. I'm going to go with Daxter, you know, reliable. He's, you know, technically not an animal, but got turned into one. So, you know, we got to love him for that.
Hey, I'm Donovan Harrell, and I had to think about this one for a little bit, but I thought about it, and Goofy in Kingdom Hearts. I always swapped out Donald Duck and always kept Goofy. I needed him, you know. Donald just was useless.
Not going to lie, I feel like this was a very creative, everyone had very creative entries here. I couldn't think of like two companions. I thought of Dogmeat from Fallout, who isn't even my answer. And I think what I settled on was, I'm going to go like Aggro from Shadow of the Colossus. I just think that like in such a kind of cold, depressing world, it was nice to have something at your side while you were, you know, just navigating this melancholic, yeah, depressing.
I really thought you would have gone with Komamaru from Persona 3.
A lot of horses.
Oh, yeah, Komamaru's cool. Yeah, I forgot that that was also an option, to be honest.
You know, dog with with spear.
Am I crazy if I was going to say, like, Teddy from Persona 4?
But Teddy is a mascot costume and a man.
True. Yeah, yeah, no, that's a fair.
Teddy's cursed.
That aside, let's take a very quick break, because I know that was a very fast intro, but we'll take a break and we'll come back to our main discussion, which is video game adaptations. We'll see you in a second.
I work better with music.
Cut my life into pieces. This is my last reason.
All right, so I asked the animal icebreaker in part because I was prepping the podcast while sitting next to our pet dachshund, Bailey. But also because it felt like a fitting segue into our main topic of video game adaptations. From Dogmeat in the Fallout TV show to the giraffe in The Last of Us, many of our favorite friends have been immortalized on our television screens. But video game adaptations span far more than just television. From Mario and Sonic to Tomb Raider and Uncharted, Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat to Minecraft and World of Warcraft, so many of our favorite hit franchises have hit the silver screen to kind of middling results. For so long, video game movies have been seen as a bit of a curse. While my girlfriend swears by the Resident Evil films, it's fair to say that those films aren't exactly indicative of Capcom's hit franchise. No matter where you look, there's a Hollywood adaptation that seems to have lost the plot of a game series that we all grew up on. But recently, it seems like we're at a turning point. The aforementioned Fallout and The Last of Us shows are great examples, but we've also seen an animated take on Castlevania, a gorgeous League of Legends side story in the form of Arcane, a cyberpunk anime, and so, so much more. There are Halo and Assassin's Creed novels. There are board games based on Bloodborne and Slay the Spire. The world of gaming continues to expand, and the quality of these adaptations is only improving. So, without further ado, let's jump right into it. So, Donovan, I know you're our featured panelist for this episode, which is really cool. This is a new thing that we're starting for our audience, basically for our latest kind of season, if you will, of podcast episodes. We kind of task the writers of the Punish Backlog with coming up with their own ideas, and Donovan very graciously suggested this topic for video game adaptation. So I think it would be, I thought it would be fun, Donovan, to kind of put you on the hot spot for a quick second. And if you don't mind, could you walk us through kind of what energized you about the topic? You know, what is it about video game adaptations that you think makes it a compelling topic? Do you have a kind of a specific history with adaptations? And also, I think, you know, perhaps most importantly, what in your eyes makes a good or a bad video game adaptation?
Yeah, thank you for having me. I think the thing that inspired me to propose this topic was the Devil May Cry anime that got released recently. And I had just been feeling mixed feelings about it. Just happy overall that it got an adaptation at all, because I'm hoping that leads to another game within the next decade, hopefully. But it also, I had mixed feelings because I felt that it was a decent show, but I think it wasn't the best Devil May Cry adaptation if you had prior knowledge of the franchise and a prior relationship to the characters. And so sort of that inherent conflict made me think this would be a good topic, because like you mentioned earlier, there haven't been the best video game adaptations. I just immediately thought, I think one of the first ones I saw was like the Super Mario movie, like the old one. And oh God, that was rough. But I think it's difficult. I think it's simple, but there's some caveats to what makes a good video game adaptation. And I think the biggest thing you need is to, one, be a fan of the franchise you're adapting. And two, I think you need to have a core understanding of the messaging and the story that the franchise is trying to convey. I say that because I think of Devil May Cry, and specifically the Halo adaptation. That one, I think, struggled a bit, particularly when it came to the depictions of the Spartans and just their abilities and their movements. It felt like one half of the team who choreographed the fight scenes like read the books and knew the lore and knew how the Spartans moved and operated, and you know, like that felt like Halo to me. But when it came to the storytelling itself, it felt like it was written by a group of people who didn't like anything about the Halo story and wanted to switch up a lot of things. And you know, I think in that, a lot of things can get lost in translation from video games to television to movies. But the successes, I think, specifically I'm thinking of Cyberpunk and Fallout, I really like the approach of just sticking to the source material so much that your adaptation is adding to the lore itself. And I think that opens up a lot of avenues for success. But I think of the Sonic movies, and those obviously aren't, you know, tied to the story, but I can tell that the people who make those movies are fans of Sonic the Hedgehog. There are so many references to random memes with Sonic and, you know, all the different inside jokes, you know, Shadow with a gun. You know, you could tell that the people who made those movies, like, were having fun and cared about what they were producing. And I think that showed. But I think my all-time favorite game adaptation is the first season of Castlevania. Like, I absolutely adore that. And, you know, another interesting example, it was pretty faithful to the source material. There wasn't a lot, you know, to work from with, you know, Castlevania 3, but they took the main beats and expanded on it and made a commentary on organized religion and, you know, created, you know, such complex characters and villains like Isaac. Amazing. I love the art style. I have an art book, so I'm a huge fan. But yeah, those are the main reasons why I brought up the topic.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Donovan. You know, I think that a successful adaptation, or, you know, what properly makes a good video game adaptation, is you have to choose which lane you're going down. You know, either you are keeping it super faithful to the source material, you're keeping it, you know, this is exactly the way it is, this is exactly the way it was presented, you're changing very little, you know, something like The Last of Us that is, you know, basically retelling the story from the games relatively beat for beat. But, you know, that is, you know, what we would say is faithful. But I would actually say that Castlevania is very unfaithful. It's using the things that were there to build a brand new thing on top of. The only real things that are faithful to Castlevania are the idea of a Belmont, the idea of a whip, and some names. You know, that is kind of it. You know, Alucard was not a big part of Simon Belmont. You know, that was kind of a smaller thing that they slid in. You know, Sypha is a later game thing. You know, they're starting this in kind of a midpoint of the Castlevania series instead of, you know, at the start with, like, or you know, calling the character Trevor, but it should be more Simon, you know, and things like that. Like, they are taking these names, they're taking this world, but building something interesting out of it. I actually think a great example of this as well is Arcane from, you know, from the League of Legends universe. You know, here's something that is using established names and some established lore, but really going in kind of their own directions, making it bigger, making it different, really kind of forging that path of the forest. I think it's things like the Halo show that try and fit right in the middle, that, like, change a little bit, but keep some things the same. You know, those are kind of the modern failures. Whereas if you go backwards, the failures are much more a failure of idea, scope, and grandiosity, let's call it, more than anything else.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say all that, Gary. I guess I don't want to misconstrue your words, but I kind of want to, like, it makes me think of an interesting topic, I guess a launch pad, springboard for all that is, you know, I think oftentimes with adaptations, people either feel really good about, I think, Donovan, you're the one who originally said it, like, kind of building on the lore, like, having trust in, like, this, just Cyberpunk is so rich with things to talk about, right? Whereas, like, it's funny because something like The Witcher or The Last of Us, some of it oftentimes it's like a retelling of stories that either existed in the case of The Witcher, you know, the source material novels, or in Last of Us, obviously the game. But then obviously having these side stories, these side deviations that in many ways could be enhancers. What do we all feel about kind of the, you know, sticking to the script, which a lot of fans seem to clamor for, or kind of doing something new, even if it involves some degree of risk?
Yeah, I just wanted to step in for a second and make a really dorky correction. The Witcher games are not a direct adaptation of the plots of the books. They're a continuation of the story.
Sorry, I meant the Netflix show adapting parts of the book. Sorry, I skipped the game there altogether.
Yeah, well, I guess that's a different thing. But but to answer your question about, like, you know, how faithful do you stay? How much do you want to make something feel like its own thing versus a reflection of what the IP actually is? I find the Mario Brothers, the old Mario Brothers movie compared to the new one, so fascinating, because the old one, it's just like, I don't know exactly how that happened, but it definitely seemed like Nintendo was not really involved at all. Like, they just, someone paid them.
What gives you that idea, Sam?
Well, what gives me that idea is now Shigeru Miyamoto is a producer on these films now. And while the quality seems to be a little bit higher, it's a little more consistent. It's also, there's really no risk involved. And that's, I have complicated feelings about that. Like, we talked about the Fallout adaptation and why we like that. Why I like that is it still felt like it was doing Fallout video gamey stuff. Like, she was drinking the poisoned water, and there are a lot of situations where it's like, oh, clearly someone, you know, used vats incorrectly and like aimed for someone's head and missed completely. Like, that matters to me as someone who played the Fallout games, but my partner, she didn't know any of this stuff. To her, that stuff completely went over her head. But it still worked in the story because it was still crafted well. And I think it's just taken a long time for video game adaptations to do both of those things. They used to be, they would just use the IP to like just tell some other story, where it's just kind of set dressing. And now they're going, okay, we're going to be much more faithful, but in a way that can still matter to someone who's not going to get all of the references.
So that actually leads me to a question. So apologies for briefly stepping into the lead chair on that part. But Donovan, you mentioned the Devil May Cry anime that just hit. And, you know, I watched a couple episodes. I didn't get all the way through. Not because I don't think it's good in any way. Like, it's actually way better than I expected it to be. I just haven't gotten around to finishing it. But it is nothing of the story of you know, the original Devil May Cry. I actually think it has more in relation to DMC Devil May Cry, a game that I quite like, but I know is polarizing for a lot of folks, than it does like the original Devil May Cry stuff. So what are your thoughts on, you know, that line between, is this, you know, just something that we can pretend is supposed to be before these games? You know, it's not quite a prequel, but it's, you know, not a prequel, kind of. It can still exist side by side. You know, and I think there are a lot of projects like that. You know, the Tomb Raider anime that came out on Netflix a couple of years ago is very similar. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
So when I think of, well, Devil May Cry, I think of a couple things. I think of a lot of is he the showrunner, the producer, Adi Shankar? I don't remember what role he plays, but he's like kind of the face of these kinds of productions with his bootleg universe. I know that he like has a thing for remixing like what he perceives as dead franchises and putting a fresh spin on it. And I think one good example of that was with the Blood, what I forget the full title, the Blood Dragon remix anime that came out. That was nothing at all like Blood Dragon. And it had Rayman in it, but he was also an assassin from Assassin's Creed. It was just full of the most random elements. I think Sam Fisher was in there too.
It was Ubisoft lunacy.
It was, yes, it was insane, but it worked, and it was fun, and it worked. But with Devil May Cry, it's a little different. One, I'll just say in general, the Devil May Cry fandom is kind of annoying. Like they can be really. Like, it's one of those fandoms that I'm like kind of reluctantly a part of, but they can be insufferable, truly. But I think with that anime, I think the biggest issue that a lot of people had and that I had was with Lady. Lady, the way they presented Lady, it was, you know, different from her video game adaptation. And granted, you know, Lady in the games wasn't, you know, like a super complex Shakespearean, you know, character. It was, you know, they kind of captured the main gist of it with that amazing episode. I don't know if you got to it, the where they tell the backstory of Lady and the White Rabbit. Yeah, that amazing animation. That's basically the same origin story, but Lady just has like a potty mouth and is just dropping F-bombs all the time excessively, and is written in such a strange deviation. You know, but I do like the whole Capcom, you know, suits for the whole crew that she's a part of. But just my issues with that were just sort of inconsistencies with Dante's abilities, like how they show him doing Looney Tunes gags where, you know, he's so quick that, you know, the mercs are shooting at him and they're missing, and then he's right next to them shooting, like, who are we shooting at, guys? That was hilarious. That's how quick he is. But then the next minute, Lady is like throwing a grenade at him and he can't escape from it, or like can snatch his necklace away, like from point blank range. Lady's just kind of a regular person. And so, and there are some other things. I don't want to get, you know, into too deep spoiler territory there, but it was just strange. I think Johnny Unbosch also did a great job, you know. He did a great job differentiating his character from Nero. But I think with Devil May Cry, I think Adi Shankar might have injected too much of himself into it. I think specifically with the White Rabbit character. While, you know, the messaging was, you know, the anti-government, anti-sort of capitalism, anti-oppression messaging was kind of appreciated, that was something that wasn't really in Devil May Cry games specifically, and its characterization of demons in general. And, you know, the in the games, demons are unrepentantly evil. And I mean, hence the whole name of the franchise, that even a devil may cry, they have feelings. But in this show, the demons have like regular people in it too, who just are like refugees and need help. And so it kind of muddies the messaging a little bit there. And it's just, he took, it's like with this case, there's so much established lore with this game, that mixing it up a little bit, some of the things, and finding that he kind of took the middle road. You know, I could tell he was a fan of the game, especially DMC Devil May Cry, because that's definitely the vibe I was getting from this version of Dante. But in taking that middle road, he sort of took some missteps with adapting part of the main story and, you know, taking in some of the main messaging from the games. But, you know, some of the main things were there. You know, we got evil demons. We got humans trying to be demons. And, you know, that's pretty much the same there. The fight scenes were great. CG was a little rough at times with the demons. But overall, it was okay. I give it like a strong 7 out of 10. Like, if you're like a new fan, I probably see you giving it an 8 out of 10. But, yeah. I think that's like my main feelings about it.
Yeah, I also want to note that this isn't the first anime adaptation for Devil May Cry, right?
That's true.
Like, I feel like fans had the same reaction to the last adaptation as well. They're like, yeah, it's cool. Devil May Cry is an anime. I like it. But like, it's not like Devil May Cry, right? It's not the games that we like all have come to appreciate and look at as like, oh, this is Dante, right?
Right. And that one was canon to the story. Like, that one was like in between, sometime after Devil May Cry 1. And, you know, they even had like the waitress in it. That was a pretty cool callback. But yeah.
And, yeah. I feel like this goes back to like the central question we asked, like, is it faithful? Is it not? Because I feel like if it's Devil May Cry, I want more. Like, I want to hear more about their father. I want to hear more about the brothers and their relationship. Like, where's that going? Who knows Sparta? Which demons are upset with him? why is Dante fighting these demons, right? Like, more backstory between the characters we care about and not these, like, one-offs, which I think... I haven't watched the new series, but I know the old one. It was, like, a bunch... They had a lot of one-offs. It was like, oh, these new characters we're introducing. It's like, I don't care about them. Give me Dante. Give me demons. Give me transformation. Give me guns. Give me swords. Like, that's all I want.
Thank you. You just reminded me of my other two kind of gripes with that, with the anime. Like, Dante never used any other weapons, any other devil arms, and like the one-off characters, Lady's entire crew of demon hunters were just like completely useless and just kind of and I don't know, just really cool character designs kind of thrown away. So yeah, just some strange choices, I think.
Well, that I think actually brings up an interesting point. Like, One of the reasons why I think video game adaptations are so difficult is because they are removing the player, which is the most essential thing about a video game. Once you take yourself out of it, it's just what you imagine someone else playing Devil May Cry is like. And that's the same thing about why I was very skeptical of Fallout. It ended up being a good show, but my favorite thing about Fallout is I am making all the decisions that are happening in this game. I am deciding whether or not to blow up Megaton. I'm deciding which people to ally myself with, which factions to join. And when you do an adaptation, you remove all of that. And it's the same reason why I think the Halo series was not received very well, because what's great about the Halo games is you don't know anything about Master Chief. They call him John Halo as a joke. Like, you just go, this game just starts and you're shooting aliens and they tell you which aliens to shoot. And then the second one, there's like, well, some of these aliens are actually part of some weird religion or something, but that's not actually that important. Just keep it moving. Just you're in Kenya now, and now you're back in space. Like, that kind of pacing only works in a video game. And I think when you try to adapt into something else, you not only do you lose that, but it means you have to fill in the space some other way. And with television and film, you usually fill in that space with more plot and more characters. And so, you know, not to harp on Devil May Cry for too long, but I think that's one of the main reasons why a lot of these early adaptations, many of whom directed by a German director I want to bring up named Uwe Boll, who directed, like, he's directed dozens of movies, but he did House of the Dead, Alone in the Dark, all of the Blood Rain movies, a bunch of Dungeon Siege movies, and Postal, and a Far Cry movie.
That Postal movie is worse than you could even imagine.
Oh, yeah, oh yeah, it's bad. But that's the thing, is like, this is a guy who was obsessed with video games, but only to just take what you looked at when you're playing the game. Like, when you're playing Dungeon Siege, you have this 90s PC RPG, you can't just focus that on one character when you're like controlling a squad of characters at once. Like, and that's what I think. What's changed is, A, there's been a lot more games that are so inspired by movies and television that adapting them back into movies and television is a lot easier. And B, these brands are so much more protective of their IP that they just already have something in mind. They're already directly involved with this stuff. And I think that's the big shift in quality is those two things, I would say.
Well, I would actually counter, Sam, that you brought up something that I think also is kind of forgotten as part of this, is that a lot of the successful adaptations right now, you know, the in particular Fallout, Cyberpunk, you know, things like that, yes, there's character agency, but there aren't characters. There aren't a main character of the Fallout games. There's not a main character of Cyberpunk. There is your character that you create and has agency in the world and all these sorts of things. But the things that are interesting about Fallout and Cyberpunk are the worlds themselves and the stories that you can tell in that world. So an adaptation of Fallout and Cyberpunk, way easier to do, because you can just, you know, kind of segment it off and say, you know, I think that Fallout kind of fell in it a little bit by retracing certain things that do actually happen in some of the games. But Cyberpunk, at the very least, you know, they just straight up go, now there's just something else that's happening out here. Like, it's just another thing in another part of this world in another different way. And it's way easier to buy that as opposed to jumping into an established character with established lore and established backstory that people are invested in. They already have a connection to. They already have an understanding around. You know, I actually think that this is why, and I will come back to some of this later when we come on a slightly different topic. But I think it's actually why in the early 90s, when, you know, video game adaptations, especially into movies, really started to kick up, the one that people think is still pretty good had almost no established lore. You know, Mortal Kombat as a thing was just sort of there. You know, we knew these characters as shapes, but like nobody knew the fuck anything else about what Mortal Kombat was, and it didn't really matter. You could take the shapes of those characters and put them into a different scenario, and people would just sort of buy it, you know? And then we went down a rabbit hole for a while of adaptations where, like, it was way more about these games that were being adapted that had, like, characters people care about, you know? Those Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider films, awful. You know, the Resident Evil movies, you know, some of them quality-wise not bad, but adaptation-wise not great, because people care about Jill, people care about, you know, things like that, and, you know, that just wasn't happening. And then they pivoted super hard into, you know, their own made-up character and went to go do their own thing, and I actually think those movies got better for it. You know, you mentioned those Blood Rain movies. Unfortunately, I have seen a few of them, and they really fall into this exact trap. They go, okay, we have this person, we have this shape of a person that some people know and some people really have an attachment about. And opposed to something like Mortal Kombat, where the shape of the person is actually all they had a connection to, people genuinely have a connection to Blood Rain. Like, people genuinely, like, care about that character. Couldn't be me, but those people do exist. And I weirdly think that Uwe Boll may have actually been one of them, judging by how some of those movies go, but that's neither here nor there. You know, it fell into it by going, we want to be as faithful to this, or what we perceive as faithful to this, to something that's relatively flimsy. So you kind of get stuck into this. And then, of course, you could talk about the Doom movie with The Rock, and like that is another one, you know, hey, it's a faceless person you can kind of attach anything to, but the things they attach to were Doom 3, and nobody should try and attach things from Doom 3 onto a movie. So there are these traps that come up when you're talking about characters that just have backstory. And I weirdly think that caring too much about that backstory can actually really hold an adaptation back, unless you're doing it exactly, you know, The Last of Us style. It's got to be this beat to this beat to this beat, and if we deviate from that, Mark Bowers is going to get pissed somewhere.
No, that's funny. I think, Gary, I agree with a lot of, you've made some great observations, and Sam too. I think, as I try to kind of guide us to our next part of the discussion, like, it seems like there's not necessarily one path to success with an adaptation, but there certainly are pitfalls, and you have to respect not only the IP that you're adapting, but also how the story functioned in that original game. Totally agree, Gary, that like, if you have something that, you know, thankfully The Last of Us is so cinematically driven that, you know, I think it's great that it landed with HBO ultimately, as opposed to like, you know, some other network that wanted to take it potentially in a, you know, crazy other direction, right? And this might even be disingenuous, but I almost think of, you know, Sam, what you were talking about with, you know, a lot of the kind of the failures of, you know, movies in like the 60s or whatever is latching onto the IP, the name, and nothing else, and like not having that kind of grasp, that mastery of why people like that game, the series to begin with. Almost reminds me of like Microsoft, you know, buying IPs and then being like, well, we have Halo now, we can just make Halo games. It's like, well, that's not it, right? Like we kind of need to understand why people liked Halo. We need to understand why people liked Rare's games, and, you know, without that solid understanding, it gets a little murkier. But to segue a little bit, to build on what everyone's been saying thus far, you know, I know we don't have one singular consensus on maybe what makes a great adaptation, but we have these threads. I'm just curious, what does good look like? Like, let's talk about some more examples of adaptations that we really, really love and some that we really, really hate, and why. I'm just curious, like, where are those instances where there was an adaptation where it's like, okay, the lore was terrific, like the world was just ripe for, you know, an adaptation. and it worked well, or you know, where it went terribly? Where was there like a great character, a great story, a great original thread, and it was adapted beautifully with very little deviations?
I mean, we've gotten a million from this one franchise, and that is Pokemon. We got an anime that keeps running, that gets, you know, a new version of the anime every time there's a new game, and we got, people keep bringing up the Detective Pikachu movie, which I did like. It was pretty good. But, like, there were tons of animated Pokemon movies before then, and those were successful for two reasons, I think. Well, or at least such as they were. One is they established the most important thing about Pokemon lore, and Detective Pikachu does too, is that Pokemon just live among them, among the people. Like, people just walking around, like the mayor of this town in Detective Pikachu just has Pokemon in his office. Like, it's not... They don't have an origin story for what the Pokemon are. There isn't an opening scene where a crack opens up in the ground and Pokemon just come out of it, and we have to understand what this world is. It's fully understood that they're just integrated into the world, and they don't have to explain that to you. And that's why in the first Pokemon movie, I think it was the first one, it was about the creation of Mewtwo, which in the Gen 1, there's a lot of mystery around that. But Mewtwo is there, and you know Mewtwo is not the same as the other Pokemon. So here's what it's already doing. It's taking some basic parts of lore, is people just live among the Pokemon. They battle them sometimes. They like catching them. There's this one Pokemon that you know a little bit about, but not a ton about, and we're just going to do a bunch of plot based on that. There is a character, you get attached to Ash Ketchum, whatever. You get attached to, I don't know, the guy who was also in Dungeons & Dragons in the Detective Pikachu movie. I don't know the actor's name. But the crux of the matter is, it's using that basic part of the lore to tell its own story instead of just repeating what you do in Pokemon Red or Pokemon Yellow or Pokemon Silver or whatever. And I think, I'm not saying these are like the best movies ever, but when I think about shows and movies that adapt, understand what the source material is doing and are able to craft their own story with that, I think those are successful examples.
Allow me to step on my soapbox and pivot off exactly what you just said, Sam, because I think you're entirely right. You know, it is, things that are successful are the ones that take love. They take, you know, things that are interesting about the source material and expand it in one way, shape, or form, you know, and ignoring the pitfalls of established character and established lore. Like, you know, sometimes it is just about take it, blow it up. And I truly think that kind of the best video game adaptations just make it bigger and tend to make it stupider. You know, the joy of a video game is that you can get really deep into minutiae, you can get really deep into lore. You know, we exist in the world of audio logs these days. But you can get really deep in there. And I think a lot of adaptations succeed because, not to say that they dumb it down, but they kind of dumb it down. They simplify it, they streamline it, they, you know, kind of give it in a way that is understandable. And this is why I'm going to jump on my soapbox and try and tell you all that the 1994 Street Fighter film is way better than you think it is. This movie is damn good.
I need to stop you for one second, but just because you have to explain to me why it made sense that Jean-Claude Van Damme,
it didn't,
was Guile.
It did.
Someone who just clearly does not have an American accent was the most American character.
I will get to that point, Sam.
I need answers, because
So this movie does everything that we have said that a successful video game adaptation does. It does it, and it does it right. You know, they take the shape of things, they expand out lore, they take the things that matter, they drop the things they don't, and it kind of moves fair. The stumbling block of Street Fighter 1994 is that it is garbage. Not that it's a bad adaptation, that it's a bad movie, with some minor exception. And most of that is due to casting. Again, Jean-Claude Van Damme, not the person you want playing the American hero, Colonel Guile. Why did they make Blanca into a dude? That's a great question. Why is E. Honda, a Japanese sumo wrestler, suddenly Hawaiian? Couldn't tell you. Who is Captain Tanaka? why did they make up a character to try and insert him into future video games and just have him drop some of the dumbest lines ever? Like, the Sam Bison, I believe he is losing his mind. You know, it is... I was talking about this the other day because I showed my girlfriend for the first time the unauthorized Bash Brothers experience, the Lonely Island visual poem that exists on Netflix. Not an adaptation, complete pivot. But I did make a point to say there are two things in this world that I can write out the entire script for and probably get 90% right. One is the unauthorized Bash Brothers experience. The other is 1994 Street Fighter. It is a glorious mess of a movie, but it's a good adaptation of Street Fighter. Because Street Fighter kind of is a glorious mess. It's built around the idea that there is just some bad dictator out there that wants to do bad things in the world. Why? Couldn't tell you. In Raul Julia's voice, it's for Bison dollars to create Bisonopolis and to kidnap the queen and hold her for ransom and everything else weird that comes out of his mouth. By the way, if you've not seen 1994 Street Fighter, you really should, if only just for Raul Julia's performance, because good God, is he acting his ass off in this trash movie.
He really is trying his damnedest. He is trying so hard. That is a professional.
Truly admirable.
And like somehow he actually genuinely seems to be having a good time. Like, whereas everybody else seems to be there to get a paycheck, including Kylie Minogue, he is there to like really kind of care and chew up scenery. It's great. He's an actor's actor. But it is a genuinely good idea for a Street Fighter film. Make it flimsy. Make why Bison is doing what Bison does. It doesn't matter. People just want to see these characters who look like this punch each other. That's it. You don't need any of the other stuff. And it's kind of where some of the later Street Fighter adaptations, with the exception of the Street Fighter 2 anime, which is very, very good, kind of fall apart, because they get into this like, oh, you know, Bison is doing this for this sort of reason. It's like, no one cares. People just want to see Gaal do a flash kick. They want to see Ryu throw a fireball and then kind of move on with their lives. It's why I'm kind of hopeful for the new Street Fighter adaptation that's coming out that has the most insane cast list of all time. Like, I'm kind of hopeful that they might take that sort of idea. And if you just make 1994 Street Fighter a better movie with better acting and writing that doesn't sum up to, I'm going to get in my boat and I'm going to go down river and I'm going to kick that son of a bitch Bison's ass so hard that the next Bison wannabe will feel it. Like, you take out dumb stuff like that, you got a good adaptation. Now, you may not have a good movie, but it's a good adaptation.
They are working with the best source material, so I honestly, I think they're doing the best. They're doing the best they can.
Yeah, I feel like casting again is going to be the challenge of that new movie. I look at the casting and I go, this is interesting. The casting is interesting.
David Dostmalchian as Bison is going to take a year and a half worth of me just thinking about it to try and come around on it, but here we are.
I like Noah Centineo as my main Ken. So
I'm main Balrog, so I gotta see 56 be Balrog. It just makes sense. My fight money, like,
it's all there.
I want to see 50 Cent get his fight money. That's what I want.
I just want to see 50 Cent stomp on someone's foot and then headbutt them, and like the movie is gonna pay for itself. But like, more of my point is, like, video game adaptations, like, video games at their core are kind of goofy. Even ones that have, like, the big cinematic feel to them, like, video games have always kind of been goofy. So things that kind of lean into that goofiness, that kind of lean into that bigness, that grandiosity, you know, that don't try and really narrow it down, I think they're more successful. It's genuinely why I think that, you know, Castlevania, the anime series, is so successful. You know, there is bullshit to the Castlevania lore. You could spend years in Wikipedia pages trying to understand everything that exists within the Konami Castlevania verse. And what do they kind of simplify it down to for the anime? They go, the Belmonts are vampire hunters. They do things that kill vampires. Vampires are bad. They've always been here. Ba-ba-ba. And, like, it gets bigger as the show goes, of course. Like, they expand its own lore, they expand its own kind of understanding. But they do that in a show way, not in a game way. They don't expect you to know those things. They teach it to you. You know, do I think they could have spent more time understanding, like, how people make a night creature? Sure, but, like, that's, I don't care that much. But it's, they take that grandness of the Castlevania series and go, okay, let's simplify this down. Let's find a lane for it and let's make something entertaining in it, rather than spend all this time going, you know, how do we incorporate everything that Johnny X player over here who played a Castlevania game in 1992 and has forgotten 90% of it, but the one thing he forgot are that bats hit you on the top of stairs. Like, how do we kind of not cow to all of those memories as well?
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, I agree with you. Like, I love how, I like to say the best video games are kind of dreamlike. And one of the reasons I think the recent Mario movie worked, and when I say worked, I don't mean like, I forget who said this, but like the positive critics and the negative critics on that movie were both right. Like, it does a good job adapting what Mario is like, but it's also not, if you don't care about any of that, it's not really a cohesive movie at all. But it says, hey, Mario just jumping around and driving a car on a rainbow, and he eats a mushroom and he gets bigger and he grabs a feather and now he has a cape. Like, just do that. And that worked, which makes me concerned about this upcoming Legend of Zelda adaptation, because I also think Zelda games are at their best when they're just doing goofy shit and give no explanation. That's my favorite thing that Zelda games do, is explain, don't actually explain that much about why this temple looks like this, or, hey, there's this guy named Tingle. He dresses like a fairy and he gives you maps. Like
my biggest issue with the Mario movie is just the complete ignoring of its incredible library of music.
Yes.
In favor of licensed music. With you
entirely
music.
There.
So I'm a man, you know, let's have Link, you know, doing, like, exploring the world of Nickelback or something. I don't know, something absurd, you know, Mumford and Sons. Like, I
guarantee you Fireflies plays during that movie.
Got it. Yeah, just ridiculous. You know, I just hope they don't do that this time around. But, you know, I have so many thoughts, but I agree with you, Gary. And, you know, I did, you know, think about when you said a game adaptation, you know, leaning into the goofiness, but I also thought about Cyberpunk Edgerunners. And, you know, sure, it had some goofy elements, you know, because it's Studio Trigger. But, like, that anime is depressing. Like, that anime hurt. And, you know, that the world in general sucks and it always wins, and they captured that feeling perfectly. Like, when I was done crying at the end, I wanted revenge, and I turned the game back on and played it. And I think that also is what makes a great game adaptation, is the adaptation makes you want to play the game, you know, makes you want to re-engage with the game, try out something new. So my favorite adaptations, one, Fallout. Fallout was in my backlog, but I never played any of the Fallout games. But I watched the show, fell in love with the show, and immediately dove head first. And I was just playing Fallout 4. You know, I absolutely love the show. I think, to the point where I think I can start pointing out, I think Maximus has the idiot savant perk specifically. But like that show is great, and I'm really excited for the second season of it. You know, maybe more Shady Sands shuffling, you know, I'm excited for that. But Castlevania, like I mentioned earlier, is one of my favorites. I especially like the chemistry between Trevor, Sifo, and Alucard. And I honestly, over time, like, developed a crush on Alucard, because, like, Alucard's great. And, you know, also they made him bi. You know, I love the injection of queer elements into the story. But, you know, to Castlevania, while the first season, I enjoyed it a lot, I have mixed feelings about Nocturne. And while Nocturne had such amazing ideas, I love the idea of vampires in the Haitian Revolution, in the French Revolution. Like, these are things I haven't seen before. And I, you know, I just think it fell into a similar trap that I've seen in some of these adaptations, and where, you know, the main character, Richter Belmont, I think he took a back seat to his own story. And, you know, I think the main character in Nocturne was Annette. And Annette was a fantastic character. They completely redid Annette's character, and they injected African Orisha folklore and Haitian hoodoo. Like, we're seeing adaptations of such cultural things that a lot of people have no idea about. And I love that show for that. But at the end of the day, I wanted to see Richter kick more ass and be more badass. And I feel like he finally turned into Richter on the last episodes of each of the two seasons. And, you know, it's like all of a sudden the show remembered, oh, this is about the Belmonts, right? We got to make Richter do cool stuff. But, yeah, I think other than that, Sonic the Hedgehog movies, love those, big Sonic fan. And the first Mortal Kombat is great. Honestly, that's one of those movies that made me start doing martial arts. And just it's the soundtrack is outstanding. But Mortal Kombat Annihilation is absolutely terrible. It is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. My God, I watched it again for shits and giggles as an adult. And wow. That was rough. I think the new Mortal Kombat movie honestly isn't that much better, in my opinion, than Annihilation. So at least they had a tournament in Annihilation. So
yeah, I actually think that. Well, I have 2 points. The first is that when I say goofy, talking about kind of even in something like Edgerunners, I don't mean funny. I mean video games are ridiculous. You know, they are just ridiculous. Like Castlevania, not a funny show. There's some funny beats and there are some funny elements, but more what I mean goofy is that every character dies in a gout of blood that goes up 20 feet into the air. And somehow everyone is perfectly clean, except for Trevor, which I do think is a very funny bit.
Hilarious.
It works every time.
Yeah, making Trevor like a drunk, like...
Yeah, like a great, master. Great decision. Yeah. But that's the goofiness of games. You know, that is that sort of cognitive dissonance of games of like the things that you're doing don't really match up with some of the things that are happening. And like leaning into that kind of grandness, that bigness, like Sam was saying, you grab a feather and suddenly Mario has a cape, like that sort of weirdness, that change from reality really benefits an adaptation. I think Mortal Kombat is the original Mortal Kombat, and to a certain extent, the new one is also a great example of this. I think that the new Mortal Kombat is a totally fine movie, not a great adaptation. Mm. I think that the original 90s Mortal Kombat, solid adaptation. I'm not going to say a solid movie, but a totally fine movie. You know, Street Fighter, good adaptation, terrible movie. Annihilation, terrible movie, terrible adaptation. You know, kind of hits that both. And same idea with the original Mario movie. You know, with King Koopa and his tiny headed Koopalings and the Yoshi egg and Princess, it's all terrible. It's a bad adaptation and it's a bad movie. You know, those two things can exist at the same time. Like, yeah, this is a solid adaptation of a thing. It's a shame that the movie or the show was trash. You know, I actually think that like this is kind of talking about the Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider movies as well. Like those are really bad movies. They're not that bad of adaptations of Tomb Raider. That kind of was what Tomb Raider was at the time, was, you know, cat suit, hot lady, do weird flip with guns and that sort of thing. Like, that's kind of what Tomb Raider was and was British. Like,
that's true.
They were solid adaptations of the thing that they had. They were bad, bad movies, but as an adaptation, they kind of hit it. I think we are now just in a place where it's starting to line up more. The quality of the actual thing is lining up with the quality of the adaptation itself. Like, you take something like The Witcher. Now, granted, people who read The Witcher books will tell you that the show is a terrible adaptation, and I'm not going to get into that you know, kind
of
thing.
There's a lot to go there.
There's a lot there. Yeah. But the quality of the show, at the very least, production quality, acting quality, you know, the time and energy spent is matching up with what they're trying to adapt, at the very least.
I think, you know, one fundamental thing, well, also wanted to say, the Dune movie is like a guilty pleasure of mine, but like, I think that movie is redeemed by just that first person section at the very end. That was really cool. And
I was going to say, does the FPS sequence do a lot for you?
Cause yeah, it does a lot.
As a kid, that's for sure.
I think it's a perfectly decent, like, C grade horror movie. With like, but like, I think, like the core, I think, issue when making an adaptation, and one of the issues I see is like when you deviate from the games, the source material, I expect what you present to me in that deviation to be maybe better or at least as good as what the source material was. And, you know, if not, I'm going to question why you changed that specific element. And does it make sense in the story that you're telling? So, you know, I think that I think The Last of Us does a great job of sticking to the games, the plots beat by beat. But, you know, honestly, I think maybe Abby should have been a little bit more swole in the movies. I think that was a big thing in the game. And Abby was kind of, you know, but yeah, minor gripe.
So one thing that I want to hone in on that we haven't actually touched on, and I just thought of it listening to everyone, is, you know, one thing that I think shouldn't be discounted, and I don't want to like summarize things and, you know, get things wrong, but, you know, considering not just the IP being adapted, but the medium. So, you know, one of the things I was going to have a segue to was talking, we started to talk about a lot of these big budget, you know, big time movies that have grossed ungodly amounts of money, right? The Super Mario Bros. Movie, which is, you know, to date, the highest grossing, little surprise there, you know, video game movie of all time with, you know, 1.4, you know, billion gross worldwide. And, you know, you got Minecraft in there, you got Sonic, you got Detective Pikachu, which we talked about. And, you know, it's funny that you brought up, Gary, the goofiness, and then you kind of, you know, reframed what you were talking about there. But it got me thinking about, you know, when you're making a film and, you know, you're going to be in theaters, you know, around the world, and you want kids, you want their parents, maybe some grandparents out there to come and enjoy the movie, that you really need to like reach a wide audience. And so, you know, I have always kind of been of the mindset that like the Mario movie didn't feel like for me, it just felt like, you know, maybe it was Polygon that said it, like manufactured in a lab, or you just have all these references and there's nothing, you know, like really that meaty in terms of just like, there's a lot of details, but there's also like no real like cohesive through line, because it's just like, let's just throw everything in there so everyone can be appeased. Whereas like a TV show, I totally agree that Castlevania has its goofy moments and you know, the blood splatters and all this stuff. But generally, when I think of Arcane or Cyberpunk or The Last of Us, I think actually more like nuanced and kind of grounded takes on these games. And I don't know if that's a fair line in the sand. So that's kind of where I wanted to bring us, is how do we view the difference between adapting to the big screen versus adapting to television and having, you know, maybe a season, several seasons to convey something. Do you think that, you know, people have, how do you see that play out? Do you feel like there's a right or wrong way to do it based on that medium? Like, are you seeing what I'm seeing, or am I wrong here? That there's kind of, if you have a bunch of money to spend on a massive property like Minecraft, you got to make it as funny and as bombastic as possible, or else no one's going to come to the theater. Whereas like Pokemon Concierge, my favorite Pokemon thing, I don't know if we call that an adaptation, but hey, I'm glad that thing exists and it's just kind of doing its own thing and there was no expectations and I kind of love it. But what do y'all think?
I understand that. This is another thing that kind of bothers me about a lot of the adaptations we're seeing. Excuse me. A lot of people kind of view these big budget movies and these successful TV shows as a sign that video games are gaining more legitimacy in some way. That, like, if someone's still skeptical about video games, they could be like, well, there's this, the Mario movie made over $1 billion, and, you know, the Fallout show is on Amazon and has Walt Goggins, and he's one of the biggest actors right now, one of the biggest character actors right now. And the funny thing is, I actually think the big game stories, especially the ones made by like Sony First Party or those kind of big AAA games, actually lend themselves better to non-film adaptations. But like, they'll never go for that. Like, you put a list here of all these famous movies. There's the Warcraft movie. The Warcraft movie should never have happened, not because it's bad, but because what makes Warcraft interesting is how broad it is. And you just can't possibly fit that broadness into a 3-hour movie. Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time. That movie was terrible. But I could have told you that any version of Prince of Persia was going to be terrible, because that might work better as an anime, or that might work better as a comic series. And I'm glad to see things like Devil May Cry and Castlevania go that route. But I also wonder, like, every now and then I hear, like, hey, they're making a God of War big budget series. I'm like, no, don't do that. Don't try to just make another prestige show out of the guy with an axe. Or you know, I think at some point they said they were thinking about a Horizon Zero Dawn series. Like, let that be something else. Try to find some other way to tell that story. Because one of the things that I love about video games is that the best stories only work in the game. And if you're just going to say, all right, we're just going to pigeonhole this into something else, yeah, you might get a layup and say, here's an Uncharted movie. Uncharted basically is a playable movie. The movie was not that great, but it wasn't that bad either. When you could try something else, you could try something more creative, you could try something more interesting. I like that I haven't read any of them. I like that there's Halo novels. I like that it's not just trying to make a movie. Eventually they did make the TV show. It's, hey, there's lore, there's other characters. Let's give you these side stories over here. Let's give you some of this over here. That just paints that gives you a little color for the games. But I just think the desire to constantly put this IP, the way that, like, in the studio, the Apple TV Plus show, how they're trying to make a Kool-Aid movie. Like, I just get those vibes sometimes. It's like, we have this IP, let's make the biggest, most expensive thing possible, instead of just, what actually can we do with this that's artistically interesting? And that's, I don't know, one of the frustrations I have with a lot of the way we talk about these adaptations now is that we're almost rooting for them to be taken seriously. And I actually find it's a way to, like, my parents will watch, my dad will watch The Last of Us, and he goes like, oh yeah, it's a good zombie show. And like that, and I'm sure Neil Druckmann is quaking hearing someone call it a zombie show. Like, oh yeah, it's like The Walking Dead, right? And like, to a regular person, yes. But I don't know. I might have got a bit of a tangent there, but I do think it does matter that people want so badly for these video game movies to work. And I just don't think they matter, because they're all the Kool-Aid movie, you know?
I'm glad you brought up Halo again, because I was thinking about what you were saying about the earlier games sort of being, you know, here are these aliens, point your gun and shoot at them. And it made me think that I think I would have preferred to see a Halo movie, and specifically the Halo movie I wanted to see was like The Fall of Reach, which is like the Halo story. But I think because they adapted Halo into a TV show and took these interesting side stories and introduced new characters, that lands us with Master Cheeks having a sex scene with an alien raised human who's also a prisoner of war. And now we're just like, how the fuck did we get here? When we could have just made a movie. But yeah, the books are great though.
Yeah, I don't know how to follow that up. Back to Medium. Yeah, I think Sam's right. Medium is everything. I feel like with Arcane, you got a series you weren't expecting. right? Like, I would probably never play League of Legends, but, you know, I think that...
And you're better off for it.
Well, yeah, there we go. But I think the Arcane adaptation of that lore is, like, probably one of the most beautiful things we've ever seen in I'd be like, video game adaptations, right? Just the backstory of, like, Powder, Jinx, and, like, how that all comes together, Violet. Yeah, so many great things there. But like now that's been popular enough to like, let's make a League of Legends fighting game. And to me, that's appealing, right? So like when you get the medium right, like it leads to other adaptations, other spinoffs that like might attract more fans, right? I think, you know, with medium in mind, like something like fighting games, they always try to make direct adaptations of the lore, and then like that's just impossible. They're fighting games, right? There's not a lot to work with, right? Look at Street Fighter, Tekken, and Mortal Kombat, all have direct adaptations, all arguably faithful to like adapting them to whatever it is they were trying to make, usually movies. But like if you look at the actual quality of what was produced, like you wouldn't recommend that to anybody who's not familiar with that franchise, right? I mean, Tekken eventually got it right with the animated series. Street Fighter got it right with the animated series. We've yet to see a Mortal... I don't think there's a Mortal Kombat animated series. There might be.
There is, I think.
There is, okay, yeah.
There isn't? But, no, I'm sorry.
No, there is. Just don't.
Oh,
don't.
Just don't do good. It.
Don't.
There we go. But I think what's interesting, too, is like going even smaller, like not even big budget, like there is a fantastic Mortal Kombat YouTube series, right? And that's what's interesting, right? Is like, these fan-made projects are usually live action, but more faithful, right? They don't necessarily need the big budget because they understand the lore better. So I think if you understand what it is you're presenting and you understand the medium that you're working with, you can get a great adaptation. But a lot of time, these big budget things, just like, we'll throw money at it and it has to be good. And that's honestly been the trend since the 90s.
Well, and I also think that over the past couple of years, at the very least, we've also seen a pretty sharp decline in the amount of big money silver screen wise given to serious video game movies. You know, yes, HBO and or now HBO Max or whatever they've decided to call themselves this week.
They're back to HBO, you know, Max. Yeah.
They're still working on their Street Fighter movie, or not Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat movies, and no one is going to call those like serious, but yeah. You know, we have that new Street Fighter movie coming. There is that Return to Silent Hill movie currently in production. But like, those are, they might have some money behind them. They might have some time behind them. And they are movies, but they're not getting the mass marketing budgets. They're not getting the big kind of things that a Mario, a Sonic, a family movie is getting. I think after that Assassin's Creed movie fell, which, who remembers that happening? Because boy, howdy, that didn't.
I genuinely forgot that Michael, wasn't like Michael Fassbender?
That was Michael Fassbender.
Yeah,
wow.
It was insane.
Ooh, like that, and that lost money hand over fist. And like, so did Warcraft, and Uncharted barely broke even. Sam, I do disagree with you. I think that Uncharted movie is dog trash. I think that movie is awful.
I watched it on a plane.
I watched it in a cabin. So I had nothing else to focus on. And boy, howdy, I wish I was focusing on anything else.
And that wasn't even Mark Wahlberg's first game adaptation. Like, he did pretty good in Max Payne.
The less we talk about Max Payne, the better.
I forgot about that.
We're all getting back to it. We all remember. There are even bad movie adaptations we're forgetting and blocking
fully
out.
Forgot.
Sorry, Gary, like, I interrupted
you. No, totally fine. You know, I think that the mass budget for silver screen has just been given up on the serious video game side, because I think, to your point, Sam, there has been this new belief of, if we're gonna take it seriously, if we're going to adapt this seriously, video games need time. Video games are long for the most part. Their stories are longer. They're not stories written to happen in 2.5 to, you know, maybe even 90 minutes at the shortest. I don't, some of those movies blessedly should be 90 minutes, but again, not going there right now. You know, there is this understanding among scriptwriters and as video games as an art form have been more understood that, hey, if we're going to seriously adapt a video game story, adapt, not write our own, they're not written for to happen in 2 hours. So if we're gonna do it, it's gotta be slowed down. It's gotta be paced. It can't be up on that silver screen. A kid's movie, easy breezy cover girl. That can happen to anything. You know, I'm very excited for the Sonic 4 to end up being Sonic Racing Transformed, the movie. Genuinely, like, I can't wait for Crash Bandicoot, the film. Like, you could do those things still, and they will make money. As opposed to, you know, I think at this point, if you tried to make, like, let's take, like, Hollow Knight, a thing that, like, absolutely will never get an adaptation, he says, knocking on wood, but who knows. That will never get a
Dead Cells adaptation. Got one.
Okay, but Dead Cells, I mean, like, in a big silver screen movie format. You know, let's say someone goes, we're going to make a Hollow Knight movie. What does it even look like at this point? Like, we're going to make a Ghost of Tsushima movie. Like, you know, that you could probably actually get away with, because at that point you're just making a Kurosawa film. But, like, you get what I mean. That, like, there is more of an understanding that taking these things that already exist, that have a time frame of 8 to 10 hours, don't cut down into 2.5 neatly. And I think that Warcraft, Assassin's Creed, even Uncharted to a certain extent, those failing did help learn that lesson.
So I wanted to, I guess, bring up, I guess, a question for the group. How did you all feel about the idea of, you know, the Amazon, I'm forgetting what it was called, when they had all the different game studios.
Oh, was it Secret Level?
Secret Level, yeah.
Yeah.
How did you guys feel about that? And, you know, I thought that they were just kind of like slightly longer like CG game announcement trailers. But, like, the gem that came out of that was that random Pac-Man one that turned into a Metroidvania game that's actually pretty good.
It's not bad. I think that the Mega Man one is interesting.
And
I thought that the Warhammer one was interesting, but also the Warhammer one has the benefit of being based on Warhammer. And, like, that's kind of the other thing that I don't think we've really talked about. When you're adapting something that has literal Bible's worth of material to pull from, you're also probably going to be somewhat successful. Because there's always something you can point at to go, no, this justifies the change we made because this, this, and this, and this book that no one's ever heard of before, except for five guys somewhere in Hungary. But besides that, yeah, it felt more like an ad for things, especially because Concord was in there, and the Concord episode came out before the game did, and then the game came out, and then none came out. So.
Yikes. It did have Concord in it, and I completely forgot.
That's an interesting thing you brought up that you said. It was like an ad for the concept of video games. And it's like, but that's what a lot of these sometimes feel like to me. And even the serious ones, like the Mortal Kombat movies exist and Street Fighter movies, both old and new. They don't exist because some artist said, I want to make this movie. I think there's a story to be told with Ken and Guile and E. Honda and Chun-Li. No, it's just the publisher said, we want to make some quiche from this, either from people watching the movie or the movie inspires people to play the games. And, like, that's really the primary motivator. And I think that, again, going back to my continued anxiety about this, that more than anything is why I'm so against the concept of a Legend of Zelda movie, is because no matter how you make it, maybe not no matter, but it's very unlikely that you make a Zelda movie, a live action Zelda movie, that A, accurately explains what playing the game is like, and B, that someone who isn't familiar with Legend of Zelda has any interest in watching. Like, so it's caught in this weird middle ground. And, like, yeah, the Super Mario movie, that's a big hit. Sales for Mario games go way up afterwards. Minecraft, same thing. Sonic, same thing. Are people... sometimes maybe it doesn't work for all the other ones. I had a friend some years ago tell me, he's like, hey, I'm watching this new anime. It's called Castlevania. Have you seen it? I'm like, no, but I play a lot of the games. He's like, what games? Like, for some people, that is a new thing to them. It depends on the medium too. But I sometimes get the feeling that if there these things will only be successful if they get people to buy the games, not if they're actually good, or not even if they're like financially successful. Like, you know, if the Warcraft movie were more successful but didn't lead to more World of Warcraft accounts, they wouldn't have even considered a sequel. Like, that's kind of what the motivating factor is. That's why these keep getting made. They're all, like I said, they're all the Kool-Aid movie, even the good ones.
Yeah. Sam, I totally agree with you. I think you hit the nail on the head for my feeling. Like, I'm kind of out on all, like, theater. Like, I would never go to see Minecraft. I'm not saying it's necessarily bad or good, but, like, they do feel like, to me at least, that's how I felt watching the Mario movie. I'm like, okay, like, this is, like, inoffensive, but it just feels like an ad for Mario World.
It's a really
World.
Good ad. Well, yeah. Like, the Lego movie is like that, too. The first Lego movie is a good movie, but it's an ad for Legos.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's interesting because I disagree with you on specifically the Zelda movie, just because, like, curiosity is peaked for me. Like, it got the better of me. Like, I'm interested to see, particularly because it's live action, and I just feel like maybe Nintendo will go full goofy like Street Fighter, like Mortal Kombat, but I kind of want to see what a serious Zelda adaptation will look like. Probably would have been better served as a TV show, but I don't know. Like, I also think of, Vaughn, you brought up, you know, Arcane and Riot. Like, I think Riot gets it, and it makes sense because, like, they just have their production, unless I'm incorrect here. They kind of have a lot of the creative decisions are still in-house with them. So, like, they have the production studios. They're involved when they make music videos that are really cool, when they make TV shows, and when they branch out and do all these side games and different, you know, genres. Like, they've had a Metroidvania. They've had, you know, like, all kinds of different games. And I think that works well also as an ad. It helps, like, I don't give a rat's ass about League of Legends either. And, well, my girlfriend's
and you're better for it.
I'm better for it. And my girlfriend's like, thank God you don't play that game. But it makes me interested in the lore. And it made, you know, I played like Legends of Runeterra on my phone before I uninstalled it, like I do with every card game. And it's just like, that to me is, you can make, to your point, Sam, like, you can make artistic adaptations that aren't like, you know, complete cash grabs that also can spread like wildfire and build up your, you know, your IP. And it doesn't have to be the biggest, most bombastic smash hit at the box office. I don't know. I don't know. I'm to kind of push towards, I know we're kind of getting towards the last few things that I had on our list. I'm kind of curious. We talked a little bit on books and Halo and things like that. Are there other kind of like conventional adaptations that y'all are fond of? Like, are there examples of like, oh yeah, this was just a great way to like further the lore, this was a great way to drum up excitement? Like, I mentioned in our outline here, like, there's a Slay the Spire board game, there's a Bloodborne board game. Like, I haven't played those, and I have folks that, you know, are like, oh, this is pretty cool, or oh, this is terrible, it doesn't capture the essence of the game. But like, are there things outside of film and movies that y'all are like, yeah, this is actually pretty cool, I'm glad that this exists?
I don't know if it counts as an adaptation, but I think one of the coolest things Nintendo ever did was Hyrule Historia, where it's basically like the lore Bible for The Legend of Zelda, and that has the timeline in there and explains a lot of stuff. It's just like, yes, I guess not adaptation, it's a nonfiction lore Bible effectively, but just little things like that, I think, can be really cool. And I think that's the direction I'd like for more games to go, where if you play the games, you're not going to get everything, but you'll have a lot of fun, probably. And if you want to know more, there's other thing that fills in the cracks.
Yeah, I think you see that with the Souls games as well. They do, like, the art books, and you can kind of see where the character development went for some of these, like, villains and, like, major bosses, right? They, like, highlight, oh, like, these details, and you're like, oh, like, I can kind of see why this ended up the way it did, right? But they're just illustrations, but it is a cool way just to kind of see what the thinking was when they created these characters.
I'll jump in to say that there is a very rich community of people making music about video games as well. You know, not just taking music from video games and readapting them, although bands like Power Glove are awesome. You know, I'm wearing a t-shirt right now as we record this for the Megas, who do that for Mega Man. But there are artists out there that just make music about games. Literally today, and Sam, I'm about to say something that's going to physically hurt you because it hurt me earlier as well when I realized this. A band called the Proto Men, who make music about Mega Man. They don't readapt Mega Man music. They make music about Mega Man. They take Mega Man and say, hey, what if the universe of Mega Man was way more dystopian? What if we make music that is 2112 by Rush, but the story we're telling is Mega Man and like really, really dark? They just today officially announced that Act 3, an album they've been working on for a very long time, is coming out, you know, in the beginning of January. And I personally have been waiting for this album for 16 years. The last Act 2 came out in 2009. That's what hurt me physically, was remembering that 2009 is 16 years ago. It's like, oh, God.
I was a freshman in college.
Yeah, I was finishing up high school.
I was just starting high school.
Yeah. It's time comes for us all. But like, there are the other band I want to shout out in this sort of idea is Bit Brigade. If you've not heard of Bit Brigade, they're a band who doesn't make music about video games. They're one of those bands that just kind of readapts video game music for kind of a rock setting, but they don't have a vocalist. Their vocalist holds a controller and speed runs the game they are playing on stage in front of everybody who is in the room. So I have seen them do this for the original Ninja Gaiden on NES. I have seen them do this for, weirdly enough, Mega Man 2. I've seen them do this for the original Legend of Zelda. Like, they are an amazing act who say, we love video games. We love presenting video games. What if we just play that music we love while someone plays the game and tries to beat it in front of all these people? Like, there are adaptations that go beyond just, what if we take this story and try and make it cool?
So that sounds awesome, first of all. But I, for this question, I immediately thought of there's a rapper named Megaran. I'm not sure if it, yeah, he's nerdcore, and he has
I know him personally.
You know him personally. That's awesome.
I do. I know Raheem. I've been on his podcast a couple of times.
That's amazing. I love his Black Materia album. Maybe think of that like a conceptual album based on a game, but. The other thing, the most interesting adaptation I've come across recently are, you know, one of our coworkers shared a video from this YouTube channel called Sleepy Nights, and they have this YouTube video series where it's a Fallout radio show with an original DJ called DJ Rads, and he's the ghoul with a golden voice, and he has like random characters from the games call in and creates these entirely unique, you know, scenarios, or just does some lore dumping, and you know, that turns into ASMR, but also fall asleep to this because it's 6 hours long. And you know, I thought that was really cool, a really cool way to sort of get you ingrained into the world in a different way. But yeah.
Okay, not a different medium, but like D-makes are really popular these days, and like the Bloodborne racing game that came out.
Bloodborne, so good.
yeah, that game looks awesome. I mean, I think it's down or it might be back up, but like it got DMCA'd, I think, recently after the Duskborne trailer came out. But yeah, I mean, that's an awesome community. And yeah, and that game looked amazing.
I just want to shout out real quick. The most popular video game adaptation that none of us talked about was Pokemon trading card game.
Right.
That is, because yeah. it is a game about battling Pokemon. It is literally adapting into cards what you do in the video game. Now, I have never once in my life played by the rules with Pokemon cards. I owned a bunch of them, and we just kind of made up our own rules. But it's still a big thing today. People still buy this stuff. I don't know who they are, but that they buy them. They do it.
Well,
you can still get these cards at any bodega in New York City. They are still on the glass everyone can see it before the cigarettes. Before you can buy cigarettes, you can clearly buy the Pokemon cards.
I was going to say, you need to start up a side hustle, Sam, where you just try to rip Charizards and, you know, make that your own little vertical, your own little YouTube channel. I'd subscribe. One last one I wanted to share before we kind of transition is... I'm sure recently, I think Sam, you bought too, right? Like the Lego Game Boy. I just finished building that yesterday.
And I haven't bought it yet, but I want to.
Oh, okay. It's great. It's, yeah, it's like $60. And I forget who mentioned it originally, but the idea of like part of the magic of an adaptation is the game feeling, getting those references from having lived the game, right? Like Fallout does it beautifully. And I think the Game Boy does it so cool. Like whoever the engineers are at Lego that design these video game sets now, they just get why people care about it. Like on the Game Boy, you can like switch the power, you know, the power thing on and off. You can adjust the contrast like you could on the original Game Boy. And it's just, you know, just something as fun as like slipping in out the game cartridge, and it has the same tactile feel that it had when you had a Game Boy.
I saw one thing that was crazy that so you get two fake cartridges, right? Yep. You get like Link's Awakening. Do you get Tetris as well?
No, you get Super Mario Land.
Okay, so the Link's Awakening Lego cartridge has a disc for the internal battery to save the game, but the Mario Land one doesn't.
Yeah.
You couldn't save that game.
That's so funny.
That's something that you wouldn't possibly notice by just looking at it, but by building it.
Yeah.
That I think is such a great attention to detail. Yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, that's it. I just wanted to mention that part. I thought that was the coolest part.
Yeah, they mention it, and I don't want to give too much. I know you're going to build it, but like they mention it in the booklet. It's like, yeah, we like kind of obsessed over the details of the guts of this thing. And like, I'm building something inside of the, I'm like, what the hell is this? I'm like, oh yeah, it's like one of the microchips that goes in. Like they didn't have to do that, but it's like, yeah, the experience of building it is the experience of reliving what it was like to own one of these things. And this is kind of the surprise I was hinting at, Sam, but like by the time this podcast goes up, I will have written kind of a roundup of my personal favorite video game Lego sets, since much like our, you know, movie adaptations, these sets haven't really come to prominence until only recently. And I'm not quite sure why that was, you know, whether it was like, you know, Joe Lieberman's attack on video games in like the 90s, or just like Lego trying to maintain its like pristine image for so long. But they've gotten on the bandwagon now, and like there's so many friggin' sets out there that you know, it's I guess just in closing to and you know, I want to hear more from y'all after the break, but it just feels like there's so many you know, new avenues to experience our favorite games. And yes, like part of it's just like the popularity of games and kind of the zeitgeist, you know, the circle is widening, but I think people are just getting more creative about how to market and share this love of games in other mediums. So I'm glad that everyone had an answer to this question, because I wasn't sure if like, is this like a stretch, but no, there are so many adaptations in different mediums. So it's really cool to see. Before we transition to kind of our outro, I just want to like look toward the future a bit. If you were to name one adaptation that you're really looking forward to, it could be, you know, another season of your favorite show, or it could be a movie that you hope is good. What would be it, and why?
I'll go quickly. Fallout season 2, just because there's an actual evolving story, and spoiler alert, they're going to New Vegas. So
I love it.
I mean, the game came out like 15 years ago, man.
I don't think that's a spoiler. I think you're good.
Yeah, I am good. Fallout season 2, that's my pick.
What about y'all?
As anyone could probably guess, I am very excited to see what this absolute car crash of Street Fighter movie turns into. I need to know how many times these people show up on screen. I need to know if Cody Rhodes' Guile is in there for more than 10 seconds. There are so many things I just need to understand about this movie.
I'm going to go Splinter Cell. I've never played any Splinter Cell games, but I was like, okay, like I'm all on the bandwagon. If your series hasn't gotten a game in 10 plus years, why do you get an anime or an animated adaptation, but no game? So I got to watch it now.
Also seconding my hype for the Fallout second season, but I'm really honestly looking forward to the second season of Devil May Cry. I want to see if they get it right. I want to see if they do better, if they get it together, if Mary stops dropping F-bombs, I want to see it grow and improve. That's what I want.
I love it. My answer will be not excited at all for the new Mario movie. Could care less, but I am intrigued about Zelda. But my real answer is Pokemon Concierge season 2. I can't wait. I want more wholesomeness. I can't wait to review that season for the site as well. But yeah, this was an awesome discussion, everyone. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to circle back and do a little bit of an outro.
Yeah. All right. So you want to know my story, huh? Okay. They all up on their high horse like equestrians. A lifetime ago, we used to be the best of friends, but things change. Now I'm feeling stressed again. I got my sword leveled up. Now let the quest begin. They all up on their high horse like equestrians. A lifetime ago, we used to be the best of friends, but things change. Now I'm feeling stressed again. I got my sword leveled up. Now
and
let
the we're back. As we wind down for the pod, it's kind of a tradition now to just ask what everyone's been playing, but I'd love to not only do that, but just kind of to put a nice little bow on our conversation. I would love to hear what you're playing. If you're watching anything good, just, you know, video game related or heck adjacent, I don't really care. Tell us what you're watching or interacting with. And if you have kind of one adaptation that we haven't talked about or that you haven't really put a pin in that you want to recommend to the audience, now's your time, you know. Now or forever, hold your peace. So that's a lot, but I trust us. What we got going on?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Could you go over that list one more time?
No, I have a tendency to stack it up a bit. What you playing? Okay. If you're watching something, you know, what are you watching? Doesn't have to be gaming related. And then just, you know, what's the one adaptation that you would recommend for our audience before we all sign off?
Okay. Gotcha. So right now I'm playing Fallout 4. You know, not the most, you know, well recommended Fallout, but it's actually not that bad. I kind of like running around the wasteland in HD, you know, and it's pretty cool. You know, not the best mechanics in the world, but it's fun to just be in that world. And I'm watching Peacemaker, really enjoying the second season. Some interesting twists going on there. And the thing that I recommend, I can't believe I haven't talked about it. Like one of my favorite video game adaptations is that Sonic the Hedgehog OVA from the 90s. And it is like and when I think of Sonic the Hedgehog, that's the version of Sonic I think of. That's my favorite adaptation of Sonic, period.
I've been obviously playing Super Mario Galaxy 2 again. Big fan of the Mario Galaxy games, and we'll see if the movie's any good. It'll probably be not that good, but whatever. But I also started Ghost of Yote like 30 minutes before this podcast, so I've like barely touched it, but I'm interested in getting to that. I'm watching The Leftovers. I'm starting that show. Not game related at all.
Hell yeah. Great show.
Yeah, it's really dark. It's a real bummer, but it is good. I do want to say one thing that I've become more curious about through this conversation is, and this is for you, Gary. Let's see how that Street Fighter movie goes. I don't think it's going to be good, but you know what? We'll have like a watch party or something. We'll figure something out.
Yes.
we'll have ourselves a time. We'll do a whole group piece on it.
I dragged 6 people who had never seen it before to a midnight showing at the Coolidge Theater.
Oh, I love that
here
theater,
in Boston,
man.
Too long ago.
I'm going there tomorrow.
I used to go to the midnight showing of The Room every single
yeah.
night.
Yeah. But I dragged 6 of them who had never seen this movie before to a midnight showing at the Coolidge last year, and they all had the time of their lives. So I hope you enjoy this. For my side of things, I'm trying to finish Silk Song. It's a long game, as it turns out, and I'm very busy. I also am playing a lot of TCG Card Shop Simulator, which if you want my thoughts on that, it'll be up on the site by the time you hear this podcast, probably. That game is something, let me tell you. I'm just catching up on a lot of Taskmaster right now, I'll be so honest. You know, Taskmaster is a comfort show for me. If you like video gamey nonsense, but with real people, honestly, check out Taskmaster. It's free on YouTube. And the adaptations that I would recommend people check out, besides the 94 Street Fighter movie, go in with an open mind and you will have a good time, I promise, is you really go on YouTube and type in Bit Brigade and see what those guys do. It's a ton of fun. They have a ton of fun doing what they do, and it's a great way to spend, you know, 45 minutes to an hour.
Okay. When I'm not busy trying to get all the Slay the Spire achievements, I am playing Armored Core 6 right now. What am I watching? I'm watching a few things. So a lot of, you know, some big anime turned 30 this year. You know, you've Gundam Wing that turns 30. So I will attempt to watch all 52 episodes of that probably before December. And write up something, but I'm also watching Shadow Skill, which is one of my favorites, and I'll write up something for the site on that. I'm also watching a TV show called Damascus. It's about the main character was, my gosh, I'm blanking on, he was in Hamilton, I'm blanking on which character he played. But it's about a black man going through therapy the first time, and it's kind of like Black Mirror-esque, because like he goes to like this virtual reality to like live out these different versions of what his life could be. And it's very video game adjacent. So I'll write up something about that as well. As far as adaptations, I recommend, I cannot believe we had this conversation without mentioning it, but like Advent Children, Final Fantasy Advent Children. Yeah, I feel like that's just a go-to. Square did live up to their promise of, you know, making games that look like Advent Children. So I have to give it to them. They did it. And I'll eventually get to Rebirth so I can, you know, catch up before part three comes out.
I love it. Yeah, like many others, I'm trying to wrap up Silk Song. Got a little burnt out. Still a great game. Trying to find time to play Hades 2 as well. In terms of watching, I have been avoiding my girlfriend while she watches The Pit because I don't do so well with blood and guts, funny enough, despite playing a lot of bloody and gutty video games. So I've been camping out with the iPad and trying to get back into anime. So I've been just watching a couple, you know, shows here or there, but nothing of note so far. Adaptation, it's funny. Yeah, I want to continue the trend of shouting out things we haven't talked about. I'm not going to go the full transformational kind of music that you were talking, Gary, but I will shout out the 8-bit big band, which is, you know, a bunch of, I think, former Berklee people, always come back to Berklee College of Music to play pretty much on an annual basis. And so I've been to a show and they're awesome. I'm like a big fan of jazz. I'm a big fan of big band music, Frank Sinatra, all that good stuff. And so it's like adaptations of tried and true game music, but it's so good. It's like, if anyone, they tour, highly recommend you go check them out. I almost wrote a piece for the site about it, but didn't have the means. Maybe next time. But yeah, folks, Berklee Boston. Yeah, great. Yeah, Vaughn was calling it. Yeah, Berklee College of Music versus UC Berklee. This is like the music, you know, this is the quirky. I knew some people that went to Berklee. They like, you know, you major in like, I had someone who majored in business and went to Berklee. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And now they're like a VP in tech. I'm like, oh, that's cool. But he like sang and played the guitar. I'm like, oh, that's cool. But yeah, no, that makes more sense, right? The musicians. Donovan, I wanted to give you the final word here. Anything else that you want to impart on our readers before we bid adieu?
You know, I've been thinking about this and for a little bit, and I just, if you're gonna adapt a TV a game, just be careful with what you do with your main character, the beloved lead of the franchise. I don't want to see another Master Cheeks happen again. I just don't. It could get that bad, and it doesn't. It doesn't have to.
You said it, and I can't.
It's not a good idea. Just don't do it.
I mean, he's spitting bars. The man is spitting bars. We gotta let him.
I will call him that for the rest of the Halo's existence.
It's on Netflix now. I might actually give it a watch finally. It's like the number 4 show on Netflix. I just saw an article on.
John Cheeks Halo.
John Mr. Master Halo.
They just really doubled that. Yeah, we're going to take his helmet off. We're going to take
everything. Both cheeks. Both
John
cheeks.
Big Warthog. Right? Double cheeks.
Old Monty. Master
yeah.
Well, put that Spectre away.
So that actor went from The Wire to Warthog.
Hey, I know. Seriously. Season 2 of The Wire. Oh, he was great in that. I forgot where he was. Yep.
Show me your scorpion tank, John Halo.
I think we made it throughout the whole podcast without swearing, but this will have to go to the R rating. That's cool. It was worth it.
We're going to have to cut some of this.
I don't know. All in, baby. All in.
All in.
Just like Astro Cheeks.
Well, as we think on Master Cheeks, our next episode of the Punish podcast, tentatively, always subject to change, will be on video game nostalgia, which should be an awesome show. So be sure to keep an eye or ear out for that. With that said, I'd love to thank our panelists and Donovan for his very first show. I think this is a big success. It was an awesome conversation. I want to thank each and every one of you. And thanks to the listener. Thank you for listening. And we will catch you back on the next episode of the Punish podcast. Thanks, everyone.
Cheeks.
Cheeks.
Stay cheeky.
Cheeks. We're getting canceled.